The vibration of change. That magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. Yes, it can seem rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, and it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of your inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. Here on the Christine Epchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Are you ready to step into your vibration of change? Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christine Epchurch Show. You might be listening live here in the Seattle area on 1150 AM KKNW, or from anywhere around the world on transformationtalkradio.com, or of course on my Facebook live page or Transformation Talk Radio's Facebook live page, or perhaps after the fact on my YouTube channel or one of the dozens of podcasts that sends up. But wherever and whenever you're joining us from today, I think you're going to be grateful because we're going to be talking about relationships from a slightly different angle, and not just romantic relationships, but friendships, business relationships. But before I introduce our wonderful guests, I'd like to say hello to the people behind the technology, Benny at KKNW. Good morning, Benny.
Hi, Christine, and a big happy love month to you and love hug to you coming up for this Valentine's Day.
Yes, and you know, I don't have a significant other at the moment, but I do have plans to get together with a dear friend on Valentine's Day. So, you know, we'll be celebrating love of a different kind.
Or with yourself. You can love yourself. You got to love yourself first, right? Okay,
absolutely.
There's what I was going for. All right, there we go. We satisfied that.
Yes. Yes, and you know, the highest form of love is what we're going to be talking about, which is perfect for this month.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, and hello, Jacob at TTR. How are you today?
Doing so well, Christine. Great to see you today.
Nice to see you too. And you know, by the way, you've got a really good voice for radio.
Oh, thanks so much. You know, I listen to Benny and I just try to sound like him. So,
hey, look at this guy. Look at this guy. Competition.
Jacob, Jacob, excuse me, just sound like yourself. That's the perfect thing.
Yes. Self-love for February. Here we go.
Bingo.
Yes. Today I've got two guests. They are co-authors and partners in marriage, Elisa Romeo and Adam Foley. And they are exploring love in a different way that is far more satisfying, that gets us out of the shadow side of love and into the holy aspects of love. Elisa Romeo is MFT, and Adam Foley, they are the authors of the book, Holy Love, The Essential Guide to Soul-Fulfilling Relationships, and co-hosts of the Holy and Human podcast. Elisa is a licensed marriage and family therapist, an intuitive, and author of Meet Your Soul. Adam is a certified somatic practitioner and yoga instructor. What a combination, interesting combination. And he uses spiritual coaching and somatic healing to help people to shift their perspectives within themselves and in their relationships. I'm really grateful to have our guests here today, Elisa and Adam. Hey there.
Thank you so much. We're so excited to be here today.
You know, it's when I saw your book, Holy Love, it came from New World Library. And first of all, anything that's published in New World Library, it gets my attention. We get so much solicitation for authors from publishers as well as, you know, their representatives, the author representatives. But New World Library, if you've been published with New World Library, I tell you, you know, they've got a higher bar. So that got my attention. And I love the title, Holy Love. And before we get into that, I'd like to hear a little bit about you guys' journey and what led you to exploring things from this angle, this higher level perspective, to make the everyday workings of relationships better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great place to start. I'm glad you like the title. We didn't know what people's reactions would be to the title, because so many people have past programming on the word holy. And so we don't come from a religious place with that title. And our purpose in that was to reacquaint people with the nature of love. And so a lot of what we do is we take relationship work and we imagine, what if you just imagined, if you just pretended for a moment that this was sacred work, that the relationship, that relationship work is sacred work. And that every time we create authentic intimacy, we are creating a spiritual experience. And that love is more than just an emotion, but also a transformational process. So that's why we really stuck with that word. So I'm glad it resonated with you.
Yeah.
As for our stories, I included part of my story in the book. And Elisa really asked me when we were writing, she said, what helped you get ready for Holy Love and prepared you, you know, in life to really receive this and write this? And when I asked myself, I realized it started back when I was 15. I went to India for a year on a student exchange program. And when I was there, and unexpectedly, there was a terrorist attack in the town that I was staying at. So there was a terrorist bombing there. It was against a group of Muslims by a Hindu extremist group. And it happened right near me. So I witnessed the whole thing, you know, and there was, you know, many people died. There was over 100 people really severely injured. And so that changed a lot for me. It really put me in a existential crisis at first of kind of like, how can meaning and goodness and purpose in life exist when there's so much suffering and violence and anger? So that sent me on a deep spiritual journey, trying to solve that question that had been awoken in me. So from that point on, I traveled around India. I actually, you know, the exchange program, everybody wanted me to go back home, but I felt like that question wasn't answered yet. Like I knew that if I went home at that point, that I would still be missing what I was looking for. So I ended up staying, but I had to leave the exchange program and I had to leave all my ties there. I actually got a call at one point from the UN because I had been featured in some news stories around the event. And I had, without understanding the political situation at all, I had preached some, like a message of peace, you know, from my 15-year-old self. So, you know, it was basically like, why, you know, do like, we have
why can't
to have...
we love each other? Yeah. And we're all sisters and mothers and brothers and daughters.
Yeah.
And that was not a popular message with the extremists.
Yeah. So I got a call from the UN. They said, you are a potential target for an upcoming attack and you should leave. So what I did instead is I left the town I was staying at and I left the people I knew, but I was set off on this spiritual journey across India. And I ended up studying with a lot of gurus there, doing a lot of yoga training, a lot of somatic work. And that really prepared me later in life to really, really value, you know, those moments in life that are worth it. Those moments of life that are like, I do deserve to live. Everybody deserves to experience this. Or if you're fortunate enough to be alive and experience this, why not? You know? And so that I, you know, that doesn't, it doesn't sound like a relationship story at first, but I think it really prepared me for where is actual fulfillment in life. Is fulfillment in life, you know, through your independent actions, or is it waking up and having authentic interactions with the people around you? So I think that's really what prepared me for this.
And when I met Adam, I was struck at how much of an old soul he felt like. I really, he hadn't told me his story of India, but it's like, I could feel all of the years he had PTSD for years and had to do therapy to kind of get some of those horrifying images out of his head and nightmares. And he had worked through it and he had really gotten to a place of like really living meaning and coming back with purposeness into his life. He kind of had to, it's like his life depended on really embodying the understanding of that, not just mentally, but like really living and connecting to that. And I'm somebody who's naturally a spiritual seeker from a young age. I was reading Carl Jung at 16, you know, like really just like, what, why are we here? You know? And my dad was a biochemist. My mom's a mathematician. They didn't have those same type of mystic questions that I felt like were really like life or death. Like it really felt like I needed to understand these things. So I had been on a spiritual path, having mystical things happen to me, like kind of intuitive things happening naturally. Mm-hmm. But also, I went to University of Washington. I was, you know, psych major, and I really wanted to follow the quest of like where psychology and spirituality either meet or they don't meet, because sometimes those fields aren't really great at interacting.
Right.
So that had been my path.
And finding a therapist who integrates the two together is really, really helpful. But sometimes those two subjects, you're right, there seems to be a chasm, a divide between them.
Definitely. And we're getting better. I think in the last even 10 years, there's so much more of a discussion, but there's so many great therapists that don't understand what's going on in the energy body. And there's so many spiritual people that don't understand projection or egoic inflation, spiritual bypassing. So
how to heal trauma, the intensity of trauma.
So when we met, we had a real kind of coming together with our own spirituality awakening and kind of energy picking up. So, but kind of like what we started out with, I think we both, as a marriage and family therapist, you hear a lot of problems, right? Like she did this, he did this, and like, it's their fault. And I think instead of just fixing the problems, we're interested in how do we create relationship as a portal to the divine, as a place where we're really discovering ourselves in a whole new way and finding real purpose and meaning outside of the ego.
Yeah. And I love that you've mentioned spiritual bypassing, because I think sometimes when we look at the spiritual side of things, people tend to want to kind of just hurry past, you know, transcend the psychological shadow work and woundedness. And, you know, I do believe, I've seen on an energetic level, people releasing something almost instantaneously. So I do believe it's possible, but generally speaking, while we're in human form, we often have to face it, because it's that journey of untangling the twisted lies we've told ourselves, the twisted belief systems we've bought into, in order to heal. And that process can be important. So I love that you guys take it from both angles. It seems really important.
When we do our retreats, we bring the energy of soul into the body, and people fall out of their chairs weeping on the floor, because that reunion of your eternal self coming physically, somatically, with Adam's work as well, it's like into the body. It's a reunion and a homecoming. And it is, like you're saying, like quantum healing happens in an instant in those moments, but it's also the years of preparation, the prayers and asking, and the egoic strengthening in terms of like self-care, inner child work, to be able to contain that energy. And then of course, after the retreats, to integrate that energy, because you can have a big experience and then it's also like, what was that? So it's also bringing your comprehension along and kind of making it not that weird thing that happened once, but really like connecting to what that is.
Yeah. And I think that's also why we love relationship work, because talking about spiritually bypassing, I think that's much easier to do alone. You know, I think you can meditate in a room and feel very enlightened, you know, but many people say, try to stay enlightened when you go home for Thanksgiving, you know, like when all of your old identity and wounds and things are brought to the surface, it can be easier to heal at a spiritual retreat than it can be, you know, visiting your hometown. So, and that doesn't mean just romantic partnership. I think you can absolutely do this work if you have a spiritual friend, you know, like a somebody that will keep you accountable and do this work with you. And with our book, we didn't want to give people more mental information, our spiritual theory. We really wanted it to be applicable and accessible. And so a lot of, I would say 25% of the book is inquiries and meditations of how you can do that with another person.
Mm-hmm. So before we dive deeper into holy love and the process that you two have put together, let's talk a little bit about our typical approach to love. You know, I think about the yearning that we all have, yes, for this connection, this deep connection, whether it's with a child or with a partner, or with a friend. And oftentimes what will happen is people will, you know, have this yearning, and they'll both have this yearning, and they'll come together, and it'll seem like incredibly blissful. And then there's dysfunction upon dysfunction upon dysfunction. What is happening within the context of these relationships where we're drawn together, and then it turns into, I can't say it on the air because we're on AM station, a you-know-what show that's not so pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we believe that longing in our hearts to be met, on to be seen, what we would say on a soul level, that level that's not just what you can do for someone or your programming, but who you essentially are in your nature. We believe that's a holy longing, and it's put there on purpose as navigation and orientation, like a North Star. So if we inherently trust the longing, I think our book is optimistic. We were talking about being optimistic before we started recording, and it's like, our book is an assumption of love, of a loving universe, and that there's a loving kind of path. Even in the biggest you know what storms, there is a spiritual lesson that's being revealed through that experience. So we can be right after a betrayal, a horrible experience, like maybe we're coming out of a relationship with a narcissist, we've been love bombed, we're shocked, the projections have fallen, we're looking around like, what was that? What if we assume that there might be a reason that we had that experience coming from love, not just to torture us, but maybe there is something we were learning about our sovereignty, our worth, how to tell the difference between ego and soul in relationship, how to discern what is the energy of true love and what is actually just manipulation and control. Those are big lessons. And we believe we come here to become our sainted selves through these lifetimes. Like, what we're doing is we are embodying love through sometimes these very challenging and hard tasks of like discovering projection isn't love. And it's really painful. It's really hard sometimes to kind of, and a lot of times we make assumptions that love was the problem or we're the problem. Like, maybe I'm not meant for love. Yeah. Maybe love's not a real thing. And we would say those are incorrect assumptions. It's usually more about discernment and consciousness about what was specifically happening and why and what you're learning. And I think what is so powerful is we really believe you can't, we're really looking for soulmates, which is just somebody who sees you on a soul level, but we can't live as soulmates if we don't know ourselves and each other as souls. And yet that's the problem, I think, with most kind of traditional psychotherapy or even in marriage and family therapy. It's like, there's so many great things. So I'm a very pro therapy person. Obviously I'm a therapist, but I think the shadow side is that sometimes we're trying to fix something with the wrong tool. You know, it's like there's a leak in the house and we just have hammers, and it's kind of like, well, where is this leak coming from and why? And I think what we kept seeing over and over with our couple sessions is like people saying, I'm just not feeling seen. I feel alone. I feel alienated. I'm like, I just feel like no one, even if they're doing all the things or saying what they should say or taking the trash out, it's kind of like we're not meeting on that soul level, is what we would call that, the soul level. So it's very practical of like how to do that then.
Yeah. So Adam, what does it mean to be fully seen?
That, I love that question. I think that is a ongoing process, right? Because we may feel seen in one moment from our partner, but not the next moment. You know, we may be in a great, great marriage and fulfilling relationship, but during a stressful week, we don't feel seen. Mm-hmm. So being seen, I think, is one of the most complex and simple questions, right? Because I think a lot of it comes down to first peeling back the layers of identity. And we talk a lot about this as the ego, as being the part of us of who we think we are. So that's our persona. That's our past belief systems and our upbringing and our culture. So we may really think that we want to be seen about those things. We may really think that, oh, I need somebody that respects this and this and this in me. But that list may not be actually correct if you really step back and get to know your soul nature. So first we talk about really getting to know who you are. And that can happen through tuning into your soul. And that's that still small voice that's often hard to hear. But if we slow down and we check in, we can connect to that part of ourselves. And So being seen is creating that atmosphere between two people. And, you know, we talk a lot about unconditional love in the book. Yeah. And for us, holy love is unconditional love. And we may feel unconditionally loved in our relationships, but do we often have an experience of really sitting and in a state of unconditional love together, of really doing eye gazing in that atmosphere of unconditional love? And we think that's a spiritual experience. And in that experience, we often have that feeling of feeling recognized on an inherent deep level for our essence, where we have a moment of like, oh, I really do feel seen here. And sometimes it's even, sometimes you can even feel more seen than you can see yourself in that moment.
Right. And Elisa,
And sometimes it's uncomfortable, right? Because it's like letting someone in into those vulnerable places.
Right. And one of the things that I think is inherent in bearing witness to another person on a soul level is coming from a place of acceptance and allowing. And Elisa, you're talking about vulnerability. It's like we have parts of ourselves that we generally don't want the world to see, because we have a hard time accepting ourselves and, you know, aspects of ourselves. How, Elisa, do you develop this ability to accept, whether it's your partner or a friend or a family member? How do you come from this place of acceptance of another?
It's interesting because a lot of the places that we feel not lovable are from our ego. And that's also where we think we're identified as. So when someone's looking at you in love, the soul is all love.
Right.
So if we're living and connecting as souls, it's not like, oh, I'm not good at this thing. It's not about self-esteem. Because when your soul comes into your body, it's not, am I worthy? It's, I am love. And that's why we say it's not about giving and receiving love. It's becoming love. And so when it's kind of almost like what glasses you have on, like what you're looking for, right? Because if you're feeling, if anyone listening is feeling, I don't know if I'm good enough for love, that welcome to your ego. That is the voice of the ego. And that's what all our egos say nonstop. You know, the ego's not great at navigating that. But our soul, when you start to feel it and connect to it, it is love itself. So of course, then we want to be seen and witnessed in that place. But the problem is we haven't been given the map as humans. We really aren't good at navigating between these energetic, it's becoming multidimensional. It's really understanding what, you know, and we're always bouncing around because we always are having these psychological complexes like flying through us all day long. So it's also a practice, right? Because it's not about being perfect, like holding it constantly. Because unless you're a saint, that's the path. But this morning, Adam and I, we've been really busy with the press tour, and our kids had stomach flu this week. And we just took a little time this morning in bed, and we were eye gazing, which is basically just looking for the soul in the other person. And and it's a process of kind of melting the layers. You can start to feel like, ooh, this feels a little scary in this moment. Oh, he's seeing me here. Oh, there he is. Oh, I feel where he's scared behind the little mask he's putting up of he has to do something today. And then connecting in that energy. And then the tears come because there's a feeling of release and a feeling of like safety and coming back home. And whenever I come into that emotion, there's such a realization of like, where have I been? You know, it's really easy to get hypnotized into the stresses of the day. So it is a good thing to just take the time to melt into it.
How powerful, you know, what a start to your day, you know, what a gift to give each other.
It is a real gift. And we do this with our kids too. I mean, I think we have a 7 and 13-year-old, and I think kids are so sensitive to, I mean, it's hard being a kid. You always have things you're learning. You're learning handwriting and how to socially fit in. And with quarantine, it's been crazy with the masks and everything. So it's like, kids are definitely feeling weird. And so it's like, we try to offer a space of like, not just always like, how's your homework? How's your tennis practice going? But like, where are you in the room energetically? Like, where's your being? Where's your soul? And they can feel it. You don't have to talk about it. It's really just an energy shift of sometimes lighting a candle for dinner, putting on music, and just the intention starts to become the vibe, right? What's the vibe of the room? Are we really paying attention and nurturing how we're all melting into our being and where we're connecting at through our discussions, and not just the surface level, what we need to, not the doing, but the being is soul, the realm of soul.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of the practices that you guys have put together in your book, Holy Love?
I think one of our greatest practices, we just love it because I'm about efficiency at the end of the day, like what works quickly, and is the soul journaling practice, which is basically, holy love is also when you connect with your own soul. And that's a relationship or relational beings. And I think some of the most beautiful versions of holy love we've seen have been with like monks and nuns that are just in this relationship with the divine. That's so intimate and like that roomy level heart expansion love. So soul journaling is the practice of going from beta to theta in your brain every day. And so you ask a question from ego, and then you basically personify at first the idea of your soul as a character so that you can start to talk to your higher self, that part of you that's all loving and all knowing. And a lot of therapists do this with like, they'll call it wise mind. But for us, it's beyond even just the kind of imaginal idea of your wise mind. We believe soul is a real energy and entity that can actually really send us healing and love. So what we're doing is we're opening to that theta state part of us where we can start to connect. So we just think one of the best practices is starting to talk to love directly as your soul and asking really practical, grounded daily questions of, for my soul is Sophia. So it's like, hi, Sophia, how am I doing today? Where am I connected to you? And where am I running around from my ego ideas of how things are? And then taking a breath and breathing and receiving what she's saying. And I think what I've seen from years of therapy working with even young kids is like, we really know the answer. I've never ever sat with a person who with enough time and prompts didn't get to what their soul information was. So it's kind of just tolerating the discomfort in the beginning of where the ego might be like, this is stupid. I don't know if this is real. What's the point of this? Like, I don't know what, you know, this is some hippie mumbo jumbo, like whatever the resistance wants to say. And I think speaking that is really good too. I think to write down, I have many pages in my soul journal of Sophia, I don't know if you're real. I feel like I'm making you up. And her saying, I'm making you up. Down to the cells in your body. I'm making you up. The hubris of the ego, right?
Right, right. So, yeah, I love that. That could be a whole show of a conversation right there. So, Adam, you know, given that you are, you know, a yoga instructor and you're into the somatics, why is it important to bring the energetics of the soul into the body?
Yeah, I love that question. And this is, so we all receive intuitive information differently. And I think intuitive can sound like it's a magical word that's, you know, a far out concept, but really we all have the power to be intuitive and get intuitive information. So there's different ways we can receive intuitive information. One is this soul dialoguing that we talk a lot about. And that's really great because you can create this two-way conversation so that you can get the information, but then you can still have your human feelings about it. You know, like if you get the intuitive information of like, hey, you need to quit your job. And then your ego's feelings may be, hey, but that makes me really scared, you know, and I don't know about that. Then your soul can respond, well, let's do this today to help de-trigger that scared feeling. So when it gets to de-triggering emotions and to healing the human experience of it, I love really working on a somatic level and doing inquiries of, you know, because I think that we know when things resonate with our body, and that can be really hard to pick up on. I think that's really important when you're also getting advice from spiritual teachers or looking up to somebody. You may be hearing the information if you're watching them in a lecture or something, but how does your body feel? Your mind may be like, oh, this is great information, and I like these things about this person. But on a body level, does it really resonate? Is that truth also true for you? And that's so helpful for relationships because we may have the characteristics we think we like in a partner. You know, all dating websites are designed around egoic traits. and characteristics. Yeah. It's what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? What are your belief systems?
What do you look like?
And those things aren't negative in themselves, but they don't account for soul presence. And so soul presence, I think we can only really know, we can't know it through information in our head. We can only know that really on a body level, on a somatic level. So every time we, and then every time we listen to that, we increase that sensation in the body. It reminds me, this is kind of a tangent probably, but I did a 10-day silent retreat when I was in India. It was a meditative retreat, and you weren't allowed to speak and you weren't allowed to make eye contact with the other participants. Uh-huh. And they asked you not to even bring books or read or write, or no music and no videos. So it was a complete turning inward of the sensations in the body. And on the first day, we started with a breathing exercise of, can you just feel the flow of air that's coming into your nostrils and out? And can you feel a sensation on your upper lip? And that's where the first day started. And then by the 10th day, it was like, I could feel a tingling along my shoulders. I could feel where I had anger in my lower back. I could feel where there was sadness in my chest. And so I became more and more aware of all these sensations. So I think the more we do somatic work, and the more we become aware of, hey, is this a fear sensation, or is this a love sensation? Is this an egoic sensation or a soul sensation? The more we create that discernment, then we are creating a intuitive language. Now we've created a Rosetta Stone with our own bodies of listening intuitively to, you know, how things feel and getting that biofeedback.
And we hold all the trauma in our body on a cellular level. So even if we think we're over it, if it's stored in the body, it is a block in terms of how we're seeing each other in relationships. So for us, it's just one and the same. Healing is feeling intuitively into the body and helping people release and cry out the pain in their left tendon and accessing those places. I remember when Adam would say, when he used to lead yoga classes, how so many women would burst into tears doing pigeon pose, because then the thighs is where we store a lot of it, specifically sexual trauma. And where we start kind of getting tighter. And I think trauma freezes us, and it, you know, blocks that natural exuberance and expression of the soul energy. So they're just one and the same. It's just another way to come into the energy of it, is locating in the body where it is, feeling it and having that release feel so good.
Right. Right. And as an energy healer who has been a part of some scientific research, one of the interesting things that I've seen is sort of before, after images of the light, the biofield, and how there will be big gaping holes in some part of the biofield that may or may not relate to something specifically, you know, some sort of injury or whatever. And then after the healing, it's like the light fills it in.
That's what it feels like, right? It does.
And it's suddenly there's life, the light force, you know, the life force that runs through us. Yes. That flows through. And to me, it's like, you know, I love, Adam, that you focus on the body, that you both do, Elisa, because it's such an integral part. And I think that we've been sold a bill of goods that being spiritual is kind of transcending the body, you know, just staying up in that high frequency vibration, when it's really about allowing the light to flow through and being in communication with the light, which is also in communication with the body and the psyche and all that. So it's, I love this holistic approach. So can you guys offer us an example of, let's say, some sort of conflict where you shift the whole approach into the holier aspects of love, to the soulful aspects of love, and have shifted something dramatically within the relationship?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's your own or somebody else's.
Yeah. The first example that's coming to mind is, you know, we work a lot with projection. So projection is when you can't see the person in front of you because you are assuming your unconscious content on that person. You're projecting it out. And the metaphor is like a movie projector, where there's literally projector projecting light or a scene in front of you and it looks real, but really it's not, it's just light. And so we can do that with our partners. An example of that is if there's a husband who, let's say he has an attachment wound. So he never has felt really secure in the relationship or trusted it. And then he has thought about cheating from the relationship because he's not getting what he wants in that relationship because he's running from a wound. And so, and then if he thinks about cheating, he may suddenly get suspicious that his wife is cheating. And so that's an example of a projection in that he feels guilt about that idea of cheating. And so now he's coming at a controlling energy towards his wife. So in that situation, we would have them both intuitively check in with their souls. We would have them get into a state where they're not in a triggered state. And then we would work on his wound first. And then we would get him to become into the reality of the moment and see if he can receive the love in the relationship. So that is sort of a technical example. Maybe Elisa can think of more of a story one, but I think that that's just something that I see so common is that projection piece. And that when we talk about intuition and psychic skills and energy, it can sound like that is outside of reality. Like that's not really practical for day-to-day living, but what is actually outside of reality is projection and wounds and trauma. So just shifting that can change so much.
And I think that's actually a great example because that man might feel in that story, which is, you know, hypothetical, but also like common.
Yeah.
We've had many clients with that happening. The feeling is the guilt and shame of I shouldn't be having these feelings of wanting to cheat. But what's behind that, like if you peel that back, is like an impulse of where I need to, I'm looking for love, right? So it's just kind of the holy love yearning getting twisted because I'm not either receiving love or being met in within this relationship. So I'm kind of now thwarting it into this other idea. So then you start to look at, you start to have them feel loved enough in the moment, energetically, emotionally. Mm-hmm. So then they can start to see where is that root instinct longing coming from in me.
Yeah.
And
it's often, you know, holy love is not you forgive everybody in your life and that you're blind to patterns of addiction or things like that. We have a chapter called Tough Love, which is when you get the intuitive information that really the unconditionally loving thing to do is to potentially leave the relationship or to set a boundary. And so we're very practical about these things. But if we don't have an orientation of why we're doing those things, of what we're reaching towards, if we don't have a moment of feeling that emotionally or energetically, we can get very lost.
I did have a couple where they were in an open relationship. So they were married, they had children, but they were open. So, and she kind of had to agree to be with him that that was a condition of the relationship. And he sold it as because this is progressive and this is what real love is. And we're not so egoic. We need to kind of control and be possessive of each other. And she went along with this narrative. When I saw them, it was very apparent that, and maybe that's true for some people, but for this person, it wasn't true. I could see in him, it was coming from a wound, which really had to do with his mother who was withholding. And so he had created a story where he would conveniently be able to continue to stay not seen. So he could, you know, have the sexual relationship, but he could keep hiding his soul. When we got him in the room and really had him feel safe enough to go to those places, then the story changed. Suddenly it wasn't about he needed to have these polyamorous experiences. It was like, oh, this is about my mother. And now that I'm crying and I've gone to 4-year-old me in a ball shaking, now I'm connecting to where all these years I thought was progressive and evolved spiritually was leading from a wound.
Right.
And that completely changed their relationship. Because
I imagine and if he recognized the wound that is in so need of being loved and seen, he's certainly not going to get it, you know, in these.
Yeah,
you know,
it was just enabling enabling the addiction, right? It continued to let him hide and then feel like something's off, but I'm going to keep chasing it. So you get in an addiction spiral. And
yeah, our work is a lot about moving away from ideas of how love should look like or what love should do, or placing any rules of what being a good wife or a good husband is, and taking our limitations off that, because that's all conditional love. We have conditional love when we say, well, I'll love you if you are doing these things. And so we,
or even I'll love you if you're monogamous. It's like, is this a duty because it's some kind of concept we think we should, or is it alive and true for our soul experience of how we want to connect and relate? And it always comes back to, are people being driven by fear or love? Because there aren't rules of what's right or wrong in relationship. It's more like, what is your soul? What is love for your soul?
So if there is really no rules on love, you know, what's that expression? Love rules with no rules, you know? If there really is no rules on love, then how do we navigate relationships, right? It's like, if we have no framework of how we should act. And so that really comes to a moment to moment intuitive knowing. So that's really why we encourage that, and why we have no dogma in our work, because it's all about, it's different for everybody. What's true for one person is not going to be true for the next
person. And even different chapters in your life. Maybe there's a period where, because you're healing from sexual trauma, you have to be pole dancing to find your sovereignty again. And then maybe there's a point where now love is saying to leave that behind, because now we're moving into a different chapter. So it's really unique. And it's about that ongoing conversation and practice.
So what are some of the approaches you take with meditation to help sort of facilitate that connection to soul that you can bring into relationship?
We have a lot of guided meditations on our website, and because we really believe that it's, you know, sometimes people feel really overwhelmed when they start meditating, like the monkey mind's going and you're like, just be quiet and just stare at a candle. I don't even know how to start that process. So we really think with music, using music and sound healing to change the brain state from beta to theta, because you can't solve a problem from the energy level in which it's been created. And that is the insanity of humans, is the ego is like, we're like Dory and Finding Nemo, right? Where we just like forget in 2 seconds what we were doing. And so it is a practice of like building that muscle so that you can really go to unconditional love, so that if something's really up, like if you've been betrayed or your kid needs to go to the hospital, you've built the muscle to be able to hear unconditional love in the moment in terms of guidance. Like, does that mean I leave right now? Does it mean I take my kid to the hospital? It's really listening to what love is saying.
One of the most simple practices, though, I start with is just simply putting a hand on your heart and just stopping for a moment and then feeling into your core of hearts, your heart of hearts. And then just imagining that there lives your essence, the part of you that existed before you're born and after you die. So this is your eternal self. And then placing a color there. So imagining it as a color, but that color has to represent unconditional love. And then just imagining that growing out throughout your body. And that changes everything's very dramatically. You will see, you know, coming from a triggered place to a connected place, just doing that.
Sometimes it is shocking after a meditation. I'll literally feel where I'm seeing from and my eyes has shifted, where instead of kind of a straining and looking in the front of my temples, that's more kind of analytical mind, I'll feel myself moving back to the pituitary gland, the hypothalamus, and really like seeing things from a more neutral experience.
Right. Right. And that neutrality, that's one of the things I love about sort of the psycho-spiritual journey. If we can get to that place of neutrality, then we allow ourselves to get whatever information is going on in our bodies, what's going on in our emotions, what's going on in our monkey minds. And through that awareness, that always seems to me to be key to any kind of transformation. It's because if we're not aware, then we're going based on, you know, the habit of who we've been.
That's it, the habit. We talk a lot about like the ping pong game we get into of your trauma hurt my feelings. And then our egos just bounce this ball back and forth of like, well, you said that and I didn't like it. And now you're attacking me and now I'm attacking you. Instead of that idea of raising the brain state to what is love saying about what's going on right now with both of us and me and why am I triggered and how do we slow it all down? And that's why we created the four spiritual relationships, which is our method of how to do it. We're really practical. We're really about like, let's break it down and make it super clear. And so that like, if you and I are talking in this interview, it's our egos, but then there's these other things going on between us.
Yeah.
And it's, what does my soul think about what I'm saying right now? Am I coming from ego and how I'm answering the question? Do I feel I have to be smart right now and prove something to the world? Or am I open to love? And then what is my ego connecting to your soul? Am I seeing your soul? Am I just seeing who you think you are? Or am I helping be a bridge to that place of our divinity? And then the soul contracts. What are we learning together here today? What is the sole reason why we're sitting here in this moment? And there's so much wisdom and beauty and we love it. We're like addicted to the work. We just think it's like, so it's an endless well of like just spiritual information.
And I love that you brought the connection on the soul level, because one of the things that I do or try to do every week, and I teach people when they're going to be in interviews, is to sort of connect intuitively before you ever get on the air. Connect intuitively, because there's that, there is this higher level thing going on, and it might be bringing wonderful transformation to people. It might be learning something, you know, like, you know, that, you know, like keep talking about body, like my stomach has been growling almost the entire interview. I'm hoping that it doesn't reach the speaker on my phone here, but it's like, so, but what can, like, what are we going to be, you know, what's going to unfold? It's like this gift, like if we treat it from this higher level perspective, then there is a gift unfolding. And we can't know what it is, but we have to allow it.
Yeah. And it's just a miracle to even to remember that, right? Because that once you start to even hold the hypothesis that's happening, now you're in a relationship and a dance with that unfolding. And it's that co-creation where it's not just, because the divine happens with or without us, but it's nice to be
part of it,
to be co-creating with it. And it's like, you can go squealing or kicking like a pig or walk with the grace of God, but either way you're going. And it's just nice to do less squealing and more kind of, participation with that energy, and it just feels good because it's like coming home.
Show up in relationship too a lot, where we can either get the intuitive information of what we need to do, or we can wait till our symptoms get so bad that we have to do something. And that happens so often in relationship, where there'll be an underlying issue. There'll be something that both partners are not recognizing or acknowledging. And then after 10 years of marriage, then it becomes unbearable. And so with that intuitive insight, just a little bit of that, it, like Elisa said, we can be so efficient with our time here.
Part of my story is that when I was in my grad school learning Jungian psychology, I had an out-of-body experience. And when I had that experience, I had what's known as a life review, which is like a movie of your life, but you feel it. And you also feel it from every person's perspective that you were engaged with in each moment. So it's kind of like this wide lens experience. And I was seeing the movie through my soul's energy. So it was like love was watching the movie. And she had a different narrative than Elisa in terms of what was happening and all those things. And that was shocking to me, of like, we are always being witnessed and loved in every moment by love. And we can actually pay attention to that. And that part can talk to us. And that part has information that will help us down here. So at first I didn't want to come back because it's like a field of bliss love. And then when it was clear I was coming back into Elisa Romeo, I could feel getting dumber and dumber as I was coming back into my egoic understanding. And it put in me this real kind of desire and urgency to stay in connection to that part of myself, to not forget again, to not go into amnesia. And and I'm efficiency person. So it's like, so when we die, we're gonna have a life review. And it's literally like, how'd you do? To what degree were you listening to love? Or did you allow egoic fear to make your choices? If that's the test, if that's what we're doing, and I'm like, I want to ace the test. Like, I want to do better. I want to do better next time. I want my next review to be got it a little better than the first time. And that's literally
paradoxically, love doesn't care whether we get it right or wrong.
It's definitely not judgmental. I didn't get a sense of like, you're doomed to hell if you don't do it. It was more just like, come to love. You can join. You can be this.
Right.
Or you can continue to choose with your free will to be limited in your embodiment of that. You get to choose that. We have the free will. And so that's just kind of what it is talking directly to love, listening to love, making it really practical, because we have this Dory part of us that forgets, and making it a practice so that it's really interwoven in our lives.
Yeah, love that. Before we go any further, I want to make sure that our listeners and viewers know how to connect with you guys. What's your website?
Our website's holyandhuman.com, and our podcast is named that too, because as you can probably tell from this interview, we really value the holy and the human part and
equally important.
Bring love to both. Our book is called Holy Love, The Essential Guide to Soul-Fulfilling Relationships, and is coming out on Valentine's Day, and will be
and
available
on Sunday. This everywhere. Sunday, we're doing a free event from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific, where we'll be going deep into the book. If anybody wants to join us, if you pre-order the book, you'll get free tickets. And it says on our
online
website how to do that.
Zoom retreat.
And I happen to have a copy of the book, folks.
Amazing.
I got one.
I'm so glad you have it.
I'm not sure. It looks backwards. Oh, well.
No, it looks, I see it forwards.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing it backwards. But there it is, folks. And it's wonderful. And I love your approach. I really do. Also, folks, this show is going to be put up on my YouTube channel. Things are going to be changing in March. So I encourage everybody who listens to this show, who likes these interviews, to make sure you go and you subscribe to my YouTube channel, Christine Upchurch. And you'll see lots of other interviews up there and some things that I do on my own as well. So I want to encourage people to sign up for my YouTube channel. Subscribe, please. Okay, so we've talked a lot about intimate relationships. What about relationships with friends or, say, with a business partner?
Yeah, this book we wanted to design for all relationships. You know, as we said, we use it a lot for our kids, but we have a lot of examples in there about using it with that work relationship, with bosses, and, you know, because all relationships are complicated. And we think that you can access a moment of authentic emotional contact with anybody, even if it's the barista at a cafe or your taxi driver, that you can have a very powerful spiritual experience with your taxi driver if you have a moment of, you know, using your intuition and connecting there. What can be painful about this, about moving to the intuition, what our ego interprets as painful, is letting go of control. Because I think often when we're single, we can have this feeling of, when will I get a partner? When will I, you know, have that love and intimacy? And that we really have to stay tuned to what our intuitive information is each day, even if we have an egoic desire for something else. But we've seen such healing happen from that place of when people really stop and they start that soul dialoguing. You know, a lot of spiritual teachers that do relationship things, I think, focus on manifesting the partner you want. But we really see it more instead of the law of attraction as like the law of subtraction, of that it's more about surrendering into your soul and your soul's wisdom of that moment, no matter what that information is. And I've seen so many people that have started that journey, being single, wanting a relationship, focusing on manifesting, that turns into a spiritual perfectionism and gets them further away from really healing what needs to be healed or seen, to really first absolutely trusting their journey in that moment. You really trust that this moment is also on purpose, that leads to a surrendering that then opens up to different possibilities in love.
And that was what we experienced. I was definitely not manifesting Adam. I think Adam, our meeting was a reunion that was orchestrated with a certain timing to it that had to do with what we were doing on our own paths in terms of how we were healing individually and then how we could actually heal in some ways together. And also this work, part of us coming together was so we could transmit what this looks like in relationships. So it really changed my idea of manifesting when I met him, because it was like, I didn't have to make, it's almost like love's better than that. Like love's bigger than this idea that the ego, it's so flimsy that our ego has to kind of like do things. It's actually like the love behind the universe is actually potentially so much greater. And it's like, we had past life memories of lifetimes we weren't together. One of us died and one of us will die at some time in this lifetime, one of us before the other. So it's like, it's not about clinging to the physical embodiment of the relationship either. It's about finding the soul, whether they're physically there or not, and staying in relationship to that.
And I just want to emphasize for longtime listeners and viewers that the vibration of change is that connection to what is. And the allowing of what is, because that is the launching point of our soul's mission, our soul's journey in the moment. Okay, Alisa Romeo, I've said your name correctly now.
Yeah, you did,
Adam Foley, thank you so much for joining us here
today. Thank you so much, it was so fun.
Yeah, and good luck with the book launch.
Thank you. Well. Such a pleasure talking with you.
And I will talk to you guys again next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to empower yourself to step further into your vibration of change, please visit my website at christineupchurch.com, where you can learn more about my insights, upcoming events, and private sessions.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.